You may well have the better claim, but I have the larger army.
Welcome to Two Champs and a Chump, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast founded in 2010 by myself, Will Lentz, Brett Zeiler, and Greg Atkinson. Currently regularly hosted by myself, Brett, and Daryl Lloyd. Thanks go out to George R. R. Martin for the world we're all fans of, FFG for this amazing game, Card Game DB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward for the Creative Commons license music that you hear in this episode. This is Season 4. So, yeah, welcome back once again to another thrilling episode of Two Champs and a Chump. I swear we haven't done this whole episode before. Though, wouldn't that be a great April Fool's Day prank if I just...
To just re-release an old episode?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my god, that would rule.
Like episode like 4 or something?
Yeah. Episode 1.
Yep. That'd be pretty hilarious. The George R. R. Martin interview. Go in, re-edit it just a little bit so people think it's different. Man, I'm terrible.
You are.
I agree.
It's too early to be thinking about April Fool's Day. Though we've never pulled a particularly good April Fool's Day prank on the listeners.
Nope.
That needs to be done.
Well, speaking of that, my name is Daryl Lloyd.
I'm Daryl Lloyd.
I'm Greg, put on your Sunday shorts, Atkinson.
Oh, I thought we were all going to be Daryl Lloyd this week.
I'm actually Brett Zeiler. I can't even pretend to be Daryl for very long without, you know, sickening myself.
Yeah.
I'm still Greg. I've top-aided with my own agenda twice in Joust and once in Melee.
And I'm Will. And I'm pretty much just me.
Well, we have a new chapter map to review.
We do. How exciting is that?
The horn that wakes.
Bum, bum, bum.
What is waking? I'm not quite sure.
The sleepers, I think.
Yeah, it is absolutely
the sleepers. I don't know who the sleepers are.
Although there is a horn that is very much lacking from this chapter, I reckon there is not a single horn.
You know what? That's a good point. I had not thought about that.
I guess there kind of is. There's someone from Hammerhorn.
Yeah, exactly, I was going to say, hello.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, this is, I think, a pretty exciting pack, so I think we really ought to just delve right into this one. And I definitely think that Brett is required to read the very first card in this pack. Yeah, this one's just going to reach out and kick people in the face when they open this.
And again, for our rating system, we do use a standard U.S. grading scale of A is the best, B second, C third, D fourth, and F as last, whereas A is, again, the best. F is just completely unplayable garbage.
Right. And for card examples, A is Mira Reed, and F is without his beard.
Yes. All right. So, starting us off with a card that I am absolutely not biased towards in any way, shape, or form, we have Cold Hands, a 2-cost neutral character who is 3 strength with a power icon. He has the North trait. Cold Hands cannot be saved, and as a response, after you play Cold Hands from your hand, choose one non-army character controlled by each player, if able, and remove those characters from the game. When Cold Hands leaves play, return the removed cards to play under their owner's control.
That's just sick. That is degenerate. I'm going to be honest here.
It's all right. I mean, I like him more than I like Arrogant Contender.
Yeah, yeah, he definitely helps make up for Arrogant Contender.
FFG owed me one.
Yeah.
And I still couldn't get much money better than this.
I think Brett's in this card.
I mean, I'm supposed to be a little child of the forest up front on the bottom right. Oh. Yeah, with the spear.
Really?
He doesn't look anything like me.
No, not at all.
He looks...
Really? I thought the elk looked more like you.
Yeah.
Look at how majestic he looks.
That's like, true. I'm gonna start telling people I'm the elk.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I sort of see it. It's like you look like you're like part werewolf or something. I don't...
I mean, I wish.
Maybe if the art were at its full resolution, you know, a little larger, it'd be easier to tell. I don't know.
I couldn't tell you.
I don't know. But yeah, I mean, there's not a lot we can say about the card we haven't already said, seeing as we did spoil it a couple months ago.
Yeah, yeah. But for listeners who maybe missed that one, I'm just going to say this radically alters the game. In Melee, for certain...
It'll be sweet in Melee.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, because it's every player.
Yeah.
Or rather, each player. So really watch out if you're going to be one of those rush decks. If you don't seal the deal in one turn and you're sitting on 8 power on a character during the next marshalling phase, Cold Hands may just ruin your whole day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be dupes aplenty for sure from here on out, I would say.
Yeah, and it's going to be really strong in Joust as well, I think.
Yeah. Pretty dope.
Yeah, solid cost to strength ratio. Only one icon kind of stinks, but I mean it's neutral, so it can be splashed anywhere.
Yep.
2 cost is just the most affordable shit ever.
Yeah, it could be 0 cost.
Yeah, but then you would want to play it on setup, and that's a bad idea. And yeah.
That'll
be in every deck. There's no reason for him not to be.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this will be the first true auto-include champ card maybe that we've seen in the LCG. I can't think of any others right now that are just, yep, I better throw one copy into every deck I make.
Sure seems that way. I mean, I don't know. It's just hard to not have that. Like, come on, it's so good. Like, I don't know.
All right, so what are we feeling for Cold Hands? I'm not going to grade first.
It's fine.
You know, it's such a powerful effect, even if it's potentially temporary, you know, with targeted kill floating around or Valor, of course. It is awfully, awfully good. I think it's definitely a solid A, and I'm not sucking up to Brett.
Yeah, I would never suck up to Brett. It's really hard to not give it an A, really.
Yeah.
I guess the only time I guess you wouldn't want to play it is if your opponent is sitting there with a whole bunch of like Lannister weenies, and it's like, you know what, none of these guys really matter. But then you are getting the trade off of a 2 for 3, which is really nice. The power icon, no powerful keywords, but. You know, I'll still take that. That effect is something the game has never seen before. I have to give him an A because you can totally ruin someone's day. The renowned characters, if they're not duped and things like that, it's just a huge swing.
Yeah, you do have to get rid of someone on your own side as well, which is, you know, something we shouldn't gloss over.
That's true.
But the remove from game thing is, I think, in most situations, strictly better than something like, say, Enemy Informer. And Cold Hands scales to multiplayer games, so he just gets even better.
Not to mention if one of those characters that you remove of your own has a sweet when it comes into play effect, and then, you know, Cold Hands leaves play, and this guy comes back in on your side, like a Dale or something like that, it's just going to make it that much sweeter.
Viper's so. Bannerman.
Is that just when they leave play? Oh, okay.
It's both.
Enter or leave play.
Okay. Well, yeah, so. Yep, A.
Well, sorry, it won't actually work with the Bannerman because it's non-army, so...
Oh, okay. True, true.
I was like, yeah, okay.
I don't know, I'm going to give him an A-. He's definitely really good, but... I mean, it's just a very temporary character control. I mean, like Will said, he's definitely better than Enemy Informer, but I wouldn't say he's... I'd say he's probably on par with like a Joro or a Dario. Or an Eris Okart, comparable.
I'd put him up there with Okart, but I mean, Okart makes every Lania and every Martell deck I build.
He does also have, you know, Renown and the extra icon.
Yeah.
For 1 gold more. I mean, he's definitely not better than Cold Hands, but they're definitely comparable.
Yeah. All right, moving on.
Yeah.
Daryl, you're next.
Let's see here. Next, we've got Stannis Baratheon. He is unique, 4 cost, 3 strength, military power. He is the Lord and King trait. He is House Baratheon only. He has renown. He reads, if it is winter, Stannis Baratheon gets plus one strength and gains response. After you play an event card, choose a character without any power on it. That character claims one power, and he has a noble crest. Seems good. There sure are a lot of other Stannises I think that I would play.
And one of the Stannises is one of the best characters in the game that I don't see myself ever playing this one over.
Yeah.
That being the one that he's the only king, he gets vigilant, stealth, renown.
Yeah, that one is so good. And, like, this one seems cool. Like, it feels like you could build a deck type around him. But the tough part is that it's only a character that doesn't have any power on it already. So, like, you hit a point where it doesn't scale outward very well anymore. Because you don't want to overcommit to the board and then just get eaten alive by a reset. It's just kind of in an awkward balancing point where I think people will experiment with it and find that it's just usually not there.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there is a cool combo with, I guess, it's more synergy with the Melisandre that steals power if it's the last one that kills him. Mm-hmm. But aside from building something specifically based around, you know, those two cards' interactions, I don't think I'd ever play the Stannis.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. There might be a cool build out there somewhere with, like, a lot of events or something. But just the other Stannis is just so much better. It's tough. It depends what's in the rest of this cycle, but
yeah, I don't know. So I mean, with the new Stannis, I'm feeling a pretty decent C. He's definitely not a bad card, and compared to some of the other Stannises, he's fine. But he is not comparable to the Stannis from Beyond the Narrow Sea cycle. I think it's which one he's out of.
I think so.
Yeah.
And yeah, his art is pretty sweet.
Yeah, his art, that sweet balding look with the flaming sword, pretty nice. I'm going to give him a C as well. That other one is just so, he's so good. But this will have some fun plays.
Yeah. He seems cool. I'm not going to completely rule out a deck type being possible, so I'm leaning towards like a C+. I don't know, maybe they'll decide to find a way to support that in the future. I'm just not sure how.
Alright, well, Will, you're up next.
Okay, the next one is a Baratheon attachment for 3. It is Melisandre's Favor. Yeah, it has the Favor trait, is House Baratheon only, and says take control of attached character. At the end of the dominance phase, discard Melisandre's Favor from play.
Boom.
Yeah, those are big words. Enslaved, we already know, is one of Lannister's best cards that's really helped put them back on the map after they didn't get anything for a few cycles. And Melisandre's Favor doesn't have those targeting restrictions. Now, it does have a duration that is kind of a bummer if you're wanting to play it, but I think you can still do a lot with one turn.
Absolutely. I mean, there's really... I mean, I can't say much about this card. I mean, taking control of a character is obviously the best character control.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like it's a two card character control right there, or a character swing, sorry.
Yeah.
And if that character has any power on it, that power will count towards your total when you move.
It will.
Control, like, I mean, between Cold Hands and Melisandre's Favor and another card we'll see later in this pack, I mean, Brotherhood in particular is just obliterated. It makes no sense to try anymore. And other Uber character builds, I think, may be gone too. Power Behind the Throne, which, I mean, any of the Rush varieties anyway, revolve pretty heavily around Cersei. That's not going to be possible anymore.
Nope.
Melee's going to be all kinds of messed up because of Mel's Favor.
Yeah, Melee's going to go pretty control heavy, I think.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, and freaking A, it's an attachment, it's a bearer attachment, so like, it, and it discards itself, so Dale can get it back for you to use again next turn. Your opponent, if you're in Joust, your opponent just has to not make military at you, or you just kill whatever their best character is. Yeah. This one, I think, is going to kind of warp some games.
Yeah, absolutely. I, as a rule of thumb, never give attachments an A, but I have to give this attachment an A. I mean, it's a card that can just straight up win you the game for paying 3 gold if there's enough power on, you know, whatever character you're taking.
Yeah. Attachment control is at pretty much an all-time low still right now, but I think even as that starts to creep back up, I mean, Mel's Favor pretty well does what it wants to do in that one turn. You don't have to keep it any longer. So the attachment control is less of a concern.
Yeah. They have to have it immediately, or they might as, or it might as well not exist in their deck.
I think Mel's Favor is good. Don't get me wrong. Still, 3 costs for an attachment is steep. It's not like Enslaved where you're going to keep control of this character, but the fact that you can take any character that can take attachments and absolutely can win you a game, I still find it hard to make the cut in a fair amount of decks. A lot of Baratheon decks want to go first. Normally, whenever you have an attachment that takes control of somebody, you're going to want to go second to see what they play. And being able to take a Cersei for one turn would be pretty fun. But, you know, I've still got to give the card a C. I just don't see it being just the end-all, be-all. But it is a, don't get me wrong, it's a strong effect. Sort of reminds me of, Pulled Under. Like, Pulled Under was a sweet card. Obviously, this is better than Pulled Under, but Pulled Under was a sweet, whenever Brotherhood was, like, all the rage, Pulled Under was a very sweet attachment. It kind of gave me that same feel. If we go back to that metagame of, like, Pulled Under, pretty good stuff to pull, you know, obviously a character with a bunch of power on him out of the game. I got to give it a C.
I think I missed giving it an actual rating. I think I would give it about a B plus.
Yeah, Daryl's going to eat those words. This card is incredible.
Agreed.
We shall see.
Get to work on it, Z.
See what I can do. Moving on to House Greyjoy, we have Gormund Goodbrother, a unique 2-cost dude with 2 strength, a intrigue in the power icon. He is a bannerman and a lord. And as a response, Neil Gormund Goodbrother to save a character you control from being to save a location you control from being discarded from play.
He's cool. Seems pretty all right.
Yeah.
Just nice, solid. He gives a cheap, reasonable intrigue icon. That's
the best thing about him.
And he's a lord, which is an all right trait.
He gives some protection from a city besieged.
Yeah. Or opposing newly made lords. He's a bannerman, and I'd say maybe the Greyjoy bannerman is among the best. It's actually a reasonably useful control effect. Is it Gorold? No.
I mean, one of the good brothers, who the hell knows?
Yeah. Whichever he is, to discard and kneel out some locations. So the Bannerman trait's kind of relevant here on Gormund. I dig him. He's pretty reasonable, middle of the road stuff.
He's fine.
He's
not flashy. I really couldn't give him more than a C+. I mean, he's probably going to go into a lot of decks, but he's going to go into a lot of decks mostly because of his intrigue icon over anything else.
Yeah, just what I was thinking. So, yeah, C+ seems pretty reasonable to me.
Yeah, I'll also give him a C. I don't really have a lot to say about him. Yeah. I don't know how many of my decks he'd make, but we'll see.
All right, Daryl, you're up for the next
Up is Hammerhorn Raiders. Another Greyjoy card that is 4 cost, 4 strength, military power with the army trait, no attachments. While Hammerhorn Raiders is attacking, raise the claim value on your revealed plot card by 1 if you win the challenge by counting at least twice as much strength as the defending player.
This guy's pretty good.
Can I just point out,
he doesn't have a cap like some of the other claim raising stuff does.
Nope, he does not.
So if you get multiples of them out there, you're just going to be rolling dicks.
You can stack a lot of claim.
Wow. This feels like a win more card.
Kinda.
I don't know.
I mean, you think about Greyjoy having Intimidate and like scouting vessels and stuff. There's a lot of Greyjoy decks that already play some of those cards. I mean, as long as you get the challenge unopposed, I mean, and you count any amount of strength.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Did you guys see the argument about unopposed challenges and the Raiders?
No, I haven't seen anything.
Oh, there was a pretty long one on the boards that cracked me up about people arguing about whether or not it would work with unopposed challenges because the opponent is counting zero, and two times zero is still zero.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this long, lengthy thing, and I just kept thinking, this is so silly, because it says if you count at least twice as much. So any value greater than zero in that case
fulfills. That's how math works.
Yeah, exactly. So the whole argument seemed kind of silly to me. Regardless, I really dig this army.
Mm-hmm. I mean, turning claim twos into claim threes and claim ones into claim twos or valors into claims.
Yeah.
I like this guy a lot.
He'll be great backup to Victarion. Might make Manning the City Walls a solid choice out of Greyjoy for your restricted card.
If it wasn't already.
Yeah, if it wasn't already, this may just seal that deal.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know. I'm feeling he is still just an army and doesn't really fit into some of the other themes, but it may help push unopposed into a pretty strong theme there. So I don't know. I'm feeling like a solid B.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. The Greyjoy 4 cost is actually not very crowded because a lot of their guys that cost more than 3 are pretty subpar in general. So he doesn't have a lot of competition in his cost slot. So I'd agree with a pretty solid B.
Yeah, the only thing that I would really like is a Warcrest. Maybe that's me just asking for a little too much here. But yeah, absolutely a B. I think that you'll force your opponent maybe to even defend when he doesn't really want to defend because he's got to get this 3-strength guy in there, even though he's going to lose. Hey, yeah, really cool card. Give it a B.
All right. Darren, what's next?
Oh, I think that one's me.
Was it you? I don't care.
This one's Plunder. It's a House Greyjoy only event. Any phase, choose an opponent. Add one gold token to your gold pool from the treasury for each location that opponent controls. You guys have been playing Greyjoy a lot more than me lately, and Choke in particular. What do you guys think about Plunder?
I don't think it's necessary. Now, this is absolutely a win more card.
I was going to say, if I want to count 2 gold, I guess, since I'll be blowing their shit up anyways. I mean, like, it seems... Wait, treasury for each location? Oh, that opponent. It's not each opponent. I was going to say, dude, melee, that is some shit right there. Yeah, I don't know, man. This, it's just win more. I don't know.
Lanny's got the one that counts off of characters, and it never sees any play. I wasn't really quite certain if Greyjoy was a house that might make better use of that.
No, I don't think so. It's not needed, honestly. Like I said, I guess I'm pretty choke-oriented with my Greyjoy. But in my choke deck, so I don't have a problem counting more gold than I could use to play every card in my hand most turns.
Yeah, anyway. Count like 9 gold every turn. Like,
yeah.
It's a D card.
Event slots are so tough. It doesn't feel like income should be eating up an event slot.
Yeah.
It almost seems like a Shaga card. Like you're going to try and make this deck like all these super high cost, like, you know, armies and shit. I don't know, but I couldn't see it in a regular deck.
No.
I'll give it a D as well.
You know what? I think we're going to be giving it 3 Ds.
Triple D.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Moving on to a new house. We are now in Lannister.
Oh, this one's exciting.
It is, with maybe my favorite art of the entire pack.
It's pretty good.
For non-Game of Thrones related reasons. But it is Janos Slynt. He is he is unique, obviously. 2 cost, 2 strength, intrigue, power icon. He is Night's Watch and an ally. And as a response, after one or more cards are discarded from an opponent's hand, stand Janos Slynt to draw 1 card. and he looks a lot like Walter White from Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't even watched Breaking Bad, and I can see it, too.
He is Heisenberg.
He seems pretty decent.
Also, he's pretty good. Stand effects and draw effects.
Yeah.
In the same effect.
On a two-cost body, two strength, two icons, is just rock solid to begin with. And then a stand and draw together, this seems like an auto-include from Lanny from here on out. Like, it's not even tied into the Night's Watch agendas or anything in any way. Like, you can just run him in any Lanny deck, and he'll be great.
Yep, I completely agree. Ally trait hurts just a smidge. I mean, he's two cost, so you're not losing a big investment.
Yeah, one and two cost, I think, is the point where I just don't care one way or the other if it's an ally. Above that, I may worry, but two, whatever. Especially even if I get one good challenge out of him, you know, and get to stand and draw and stuff, he paid for himself.
Yep, I concur. This guy is pretty strong. Pretty strong indeed.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have to be in the challenge. It doesn't have to be off of an intrigue challenge. If he's knelt for whatever reason in the plot phase and you rule out a creature, your opponent, he stands up and you draw a card.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you've knelt him for an event, say Lannister pays his debts, and then make an intrigue challenge with somebody else or something like that, or in melee, if an opponent intrigues someone else, Janus can stand back up. Like,
yep.
He can do a lot.
And drawing cards is always dope.
Yeah, it was some pretty good work.
Yeah, I wasn't really sure if Lanny would get some more solid draw events, or sorry, draw effects like this, but they sure did.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, this guy, he's kind of an A-. Maybe a B-plus at the absolute worst.
Yeah, I was leaning towards B-plus, but I could sure be convinced into the A-minus range. Like, there's just nothing that I would actually say is bad here.
Except for that ally trait.
Yeah, despite the ally trait, he's at that low cost and pays for himself in cards as long as you get to use him once.
God. This could be a burnt down and shit. Oh, boy. I don't know if he's an A. I don't know about that jazz. I guess I'll give him a B. I mean, in a house that already has so much draw, I mean, the stand effect is good, but I don't give a shit about staying a two-strength dude. Like, come on. I want to give him a C. Fuck it. I'm going to give him a C. Like, that is decent, but there are a plethora of other cards that I would like to play in my Lannister deck, so I'm doing it. I'm giving him a C.
Well, this is not going to be Daryl's pack.
Yeah, it really is.
I don't give a shit.
Janus is a very strong card, D. I think you need to
play with him. I'll be the judge of that.
All right. Well, we'll have him in hand shortly, I hope, and we can do that.
Then after I play my O card, you can be like, aw.
All right, Daryl.
Okay. Next up is Janos. Janos's? Whatever. Janos. Yeah, sure. Conspirator. He is another Lanny card. He's two cost, two strength, military intrigue. He has the Night's Watch trait, and he reads response. After you play Janos' Conspirator from your hand, choose a Neela character if there is a Wildling or another Night's Watch character in play.
You know, if this guy had been out a month ago, I would have played Lannister Wildlings at Worlds.
Yeah, holy shitballs.
Like I said about Slint, I didn't think they'd get another efficient draw effect like that. I really never thought they'd get another efficient Neela like this.
That's crazy. Any Informer 4, 5, and 6 and Night's Watch and Wildling decks.
Yeah. That's and crazy. I don't think you have to have that big of a commitment to those traits to really make him reasonable. You just need one other in there. You're already running three of those. You're probably running a Slint. Throw in Arel the Eagle, maybe.
Oh my god, yes.
I don't know, Varamyr or Gilly. Yeah, it only takes a smattering of those cards, I think, for the Conspirator to be active.
Yeah.
And then it's a two cost Informer.
Yep.
Yeah. Yes. Now that's just super good. And the stock of Lanny Wildlings is so fat now. That's crazy good. Ugh. Yeah. That's so good.
Yeah. I love this guy. Lenny came out of this pack smelling like roses.
Yeah.
Man, I don't think I can quite give him as good of a rating as Slint, because he does depend on other cards being around. But I want to give him a B minus, I think. He's pretty strong.
I'm a pretty solid B on him. Man, yeah. Lanny Wildlings is a good to an all right to good deck before this card, and with this guy, it puts it up to the next level. That's even not even taking account, just like a standard Lannister deck that can splash some good Wildlings and Nightwatch guys.
Yeah, in a Lanny North Agendas deck, like, absolutely, this card's an A in that deck every time. But because it's not, I just have to give him a B, because outside of those decks, he does nothing, literally nothing.
I mean, that's absolutely true. I mean, you can screen. There's good Nightwatch and Wildling characters you can splash.
Right, yeah. I know that.
But. And he's still a body on the board with that same 2 cost, 2 strength, 2 icons. That's just kind of the baseline. Like, he's acceptable otherwise.
Yeah.
All right, William?
Yeah. Next one is the next awesome Lanny card in this pack. Secret Orders. It's an event, House Lannister only, and any phase, choose a character. Until the end of the phase, that character's base strength is X. X is the amount of gold in its controller's gold pool when this effect resolves.
Hang on a second. Really quick. Janos Slint, the one we looked at earlier, works great with the Lannister Pays His Debts.
Yeah.
So I take it back. I take it back.
Yeah, he does. I specifically said a Lannister Pays His Debts.
Shut the hell up. I wasn't paying attention. Okay, let's move on. Secret Orders.
This card's also pretty strong.
Yeah, man, it's any player and any phase. So you wait until challenges, when your opponent's already marshaled, unless they're like a Shadows deck, they've probably already spent everything. Even if they're a Shadows deck, they probably spent that in the challenge phase to bring something out. And then you say, hey, by the way, you know that Viper's Bannerman on the board? Its strength is 0 for the rest of this phase.
I mean, heck, it's a decent anti-Targ card for the Threat from the North turn. Like, you know, in the draw phase, you know, if they reveal Threat from the North, they have no gold. Just play it on their best character in the draw phase to discard it.
Yeah, that's not bad. Or if you need to win your own challenges, you know, Lanny generally has a few extra gold sitting around. If you know this is in your deck, and you know it's around, you can kind of tweak your marshaling and stuff around that. It's not uncommon for Lanny to have, you know, like 4 gold sitting in their gold pool if they were already, you know, planning on it using it a certain way. And then, you know, your moneylender or whatever it is 4 strength now to force through a challenge that you couldn't get through before. It's just super versatile.
Yeah. However, the landing event slots are do tend to be pretty tight.
Yeah. It's difficult.
Although I am leaning more and more towards playing some one-ofs on events, just to give you more options in general, as well as creating the fear that an opponent has to feel, you know, when you play your first secret, or they have to, in the back of their head, think, when's number 2 and 3 coming out?
Yeah. You start splitting, like, secret orders with House Divided and whatnot, and when you start playing any one of those events, then they have to really warp how they play the rest of their game in the marshalling phase, and that can really help you.
Yeah. But overall, just because the Lanny events do tend to be pretty tight, probably, you know, outside of Martell, probably it's harder, you know, to get your Lanny events than any other house. I'm feeling like a C+, B- maybe. C+ probably.
I'm feeling like a B-. I dig this one a lot because the negative use aspect of it is going to be awfully strong.
And it is exceptionally versatile.
Yeah, it's a neat control card and kind of gets your brain ticking a little bit as far as like doing maybe run your own Threat from the North. I don't know. I'll give it a C. It's decent.
All right.
Moving on to a new house again. I'm leading on the new house changes apparently this pack.
Yeah.
We have Viper's Paramour. It is a one-cost non-unique Martell character, one-strength entry icon, and she's an ally. And ally characters cannot be declared as defenders while Viper's paramour is attacking.
Anti-Lanny card. sort of an anti-Targ card, too, I guess. Got a lot of allies, but one strength can last.
Okay. We get it. Yeah. This card would be neat if allies were played. Like, it's just, it's never. Yeah, you sure do. And you know what you don't care if they do? Attack or defend. Ever.
Yeah, they're usually there for other reasons.
Yeah, this card sucks.
Yeah. I do wish if she had more icons, then I'd be like, okay, maybe I'll give this a shot. She'll push through some challenges. But only that intrigue icon, that makes me sad.
Well, and to be fair, there are ways that Martell can give icons now. But
there's one in this pack.
The problem is the amount. Sorry. The problem is the amount of trouble you'd have to go through to like change somebody's traits or something like that to make it effective. It's just it just doesn't work.
This card is a D minus.
Yeah, I like the concept of seeing some more anti-ally stuff in the game, but I don't really think that this one will see play. So
it will not.
I'll give it a D as well.
Sure, I'll give it a D. That's fine.
Moving on.
Yep, Daryl, you're up.
Oh, am I second? For some reason, I thought you were all right. Next up is Will's likeness in a card.
Dude, it kind of is.
I know, yeah, right?
See that?
Dane? I never noticed.
Little too much hair on top.
A little too much. Okay. Dane Spearman. He is one to bring out of shadows. He has 2 strength, military, and power icon. He has the House Dane trait, House Martell only. Response, after you lose a challenge, put Dane Spearman into shadows to choose a character. That character loses a military, an intrigue, and a power icon until the end of the phase. And he has a Shadow's Crest.
This guy's pretty decent.
Yeah. Seems like a reasonable replacement for Orphan if you want to use your restricted slot elsewhere.
Yeah, he looks like a real solid pain in the ass, that's for sure. It almost makes you want to do like a Martell Kingsguard deck and have all this like shadows jumping out shit and pretty neat.
Yeah, the fact that he goes back into shadows can kind of limit things a little bit, like as far as how many other Shadows cards you can use along with him, since you can only bring so many out. But I dig him. He's solid. If you're first, he gets to make a challenge, probably.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and then still use his ability. Dane is a semi-relevant trait. I don't really see any downside. This is a nice control effect for Martell.
It's a fine control effect for Martell.
And I think it's a good card for the House Dane archetype, too. So let's not forget, that's sort of a thing, guys. I like House Dane. I like House Dane a lot. And so they could use all the help they can get.
Yeah. So what kind of rating would you guys give him?
He's a pretty good C.
Yeah, I hate to agree with you. But he's a C.
I'd give him like a C plus. Losing all icons is a strong ability.
Losing all icons after they use their best character and whatever challenge triggers them.
Yeah, fair enough. Losing all icons on their second best character is worth pointing out. So
I mean, you can lose a challenge as the attacker though too.
That's true.
There's some utility in it.
Just a little. He's still a C.
All right. Next card. All right, this one's a Martell location for 1. It is non-unique, which I didn't notice the first time I saw it in the draft packs. This is Dornish Hermitage. It's a stronghold and Dorn, and any phase, discard a card from your hand to choose a character. Until the end of the phase, that character gains an icon of your choice.
It's also 1 cost.
Did I not say that? My bad.
It's all good.
I actually dig this. I've been seeing some other folks pan it, but I like it. The Lanny Clansman that you can discard a card to give an icon.
Mm-hmm.
Defensive play.
It doesn't seem much constructive play, but I really dig it. And, of course, got to draft with it over the weekend where it's awesome.
I mean, yeah, that's a different story.
Yeah. But I like that Dornish Hermitage gives you that flexibility for literally all of the characters you have on the board without you having to devote other, you know, slots and stuff. You know, suddenly now on your To the Spears turn, Urso Guard has an intrigue icon or... You know, whatever it might be, I just like, you know, any of your characters now are tricons when you need them to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's spectacular on the one time he's discard Dark Star to it. Aside that from too. That, it's not something I would ever play or trigger.
I suppose it does have some utility in some decks where you're trying to ditch cards from your hand, which we're seeing that Martell's, you know, going to be able to do that a lot easier now. And, you know, I don't know. I still like Green Blood Vessel more than this card, personally.
I agree with that. I mean, I really can't give it much more than like a C minus. And that's pretty much just for the interaction with Darkstar.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that Green Blood Vessel is just bonkers good, and nobody plays that as is, so I'll give this card a D.
Yeah, I don't think it's amazing, but I think it's a solid C.
Alright. Moving up north to House Stark, we have the previously spoiled Jon Snow. He is, of course, unique. He is 3 cost. He is 2 strength. With a military power icon, he is a bastard, he is Night's Watch, and he is a wildling. He has deadly. He also gives your wildling characters +1 strength, and your Night's Watch characters gain immune to events. And that does include him, so he's effectively a 3 cost, 3 strength, 2 icon, deadly, immune to events.
And he also knows nothing.
He knows nothing.
He does. But that seems like a pretty good combination.
He's so solid. That is just so... Ah, so solid.
I'm still not convinced that it's enough to make Night's Watch a terribly relevant thing. But he slots pretty well into Wildlings.
Yeah.
He does. And
it's one step in the right direction.
Even without, you know, the full theme deck, he's pretty solid on his own, I think.
Yeah, even on his own, he's probably worth a lot.
Yeah, that art is also the dopest. I really like that art.
It's good.
A part of me really hopes that there's a ghost floating around in this cycle or something that has like the extended art, you know, like the other Jon Snow and
that would be ghost. Pretty sweet.
That'd be neat. So really, he's as solid as it gets. That's awesome. Deadly with a military icon, not so likable, but hey, power icon, that could be worth something.
Definitely worth something. And he dodges all the Westeros bleeds that are running rampant in this environment.
Absolutely. Agreed.
And the I keep forgetting the name of the event, the one that Greg was running, the Bear Greyjoy.
Storm the Gates,
there we go. Yeah.
He could be a serious linchpin in a Night's Watch deck, so keep your eyes peeled. I think so.
I just don't think it's enough.
I mean, but if I'm running a Night's Watch deck, he's a 3X every time.
Yeah, maybe. But he's definitely a B card.
Yeah, he's pretty solid. I'd give him B plus, or sorry, not B plus. I meant to say B minus.
Yeah, he gets a serious B. Again, outside those decks, he's still awesome. Inside those decks, he's freaking baller. So, serious B.
All right, Durrell.
Next up is another Stark character. It is Yoren. He's unique. He's 1 cost. He's 2 strength with a military icon. He has the Night's Watch and the ally trait. If it is not summer, Yoren can defend intrigue challenges declared against you, even while kneeling.
That is pretty spectacularly slightly above average.
Yeah, like, he's alright. I'd throw a copy in for setup and whatnot, and that's almost all that I can say.
I mean, surprise intrigue defense.
Stealth would be neat, at least.
Not that much surprise, since he is on the board. Where they can see him, but you know that can be useful in Joust and Melee. But I really like this type of effect in Melee, since it makes people want to send their attackers elsewhere. And ally really doesn't hurt on a one strength guy, so yeah, I mean, I'd throw one copy in.
I mean, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, what can it? He's pretty straightforward.
Yeah,
he's a one cost guy that doesn't doesn't already have another version in the LCG, so
right.
He's worth a slot in pretty much every start guy.
And who unfortunately does not push Night's Watch as an archetype at all.
Not at all.
I'll give him a C.
Yeah, he's a C.
Yeah.
He's kind of like the definition of a C.
Exactly.
Cost is his saving grace, that's for sure.
All right. On to our next one?
Yep.
All right, this is our first Targ card of the pack. This is Aegon's Favor. It's an attachment for zero with the favor type. It has the setup keyword and must be attached to a character you control. Challenges. Discard the top card of your deck to give attached character +1 strength until the end of the phase. Limit 5 per round.
This card is beastly in a Bera Army Reversion deck.
Yeah, I would love the ability to just toss 5 cards off the top of my deck. Every turn.
Yep. Any kind of self-mill deck in general.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I'd probably be willing to pay 2 for it. And to boot, I get a pretty solid character for challenges for that round.
And again, it does have the setup keyword.
Mm-hmm. Nothing to be sneezed at.
Absolutely nothing.
In fact, that may be the keyword that makes attachments most playable.
Yep.
Yeah.
Man, but outside of that kind of specific combo-y deck that wants to discard itself...
Oh, it's not great.
Yeah, I would almost certainly always want something else.
Yeah.
So, I kind of just want to give Aegon's Favor a D with the caveat that, yes, it is great for certain combo decks, but it really doesn't have any use except from powering that combo.
Yeah, it's a D-plus card.
Yeah.
Always having the threat of being able to pump up 5 strength is pretty awesome. But, yeah, I mean,
and to be fair, the cards in your deck, I mean, when you're discarding them, you're not hurting yourself. You're not losing any of your, you know, options that can affect the game right now, so. But it is just a strength pump that's just on the board that your opponent can easily take into account.
Yeah,
you can make some choices, but.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it finds its way into some other houses.
Agreed.
I agree with that.
I shall give it a D.
Thanks for that, Daryl.
You're welcome.
Moving on, still in Targ, Loyal to the Last. This card's going to sound pretty familiar to you, certainly with the pretty famous Corset card, because the text is challenges. During a power challenge, kneel 2 of your Targaryen characters to kill all attacking characters. Limit 1 per challenge.
Dude, melee, that's gonna make you a fucking dick.
Yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're seeing many cards in this pack that just completely alter melee like nobody's business.
Unfortunately, the card's not that good at Joust.
Yeah, that's the tough part. People don't really throw, you know, 3-4 characters into power challenges normally.
But there is synergy. There is synergy with to be a dragon, so you never know.
That's true.
Yeah.
Still not much special. It's pretty.
I mean, it's sort of like it's sort of like lethal counter. I mean, it's just like lethal counterattack.
Yeah,
you know?
It is exactly lethal counterattack.
It can be the kind of card that can absolutely turn the tide of a game, and it can be the kind of card that is going to sit in your hand the entire game because you don't have a worthwhile chance to use it. Targaryen, though, I think could get some utility out of it since they do have characters that come into play. You know, with the ambush trait and stuff like that. So they get some use out of it.
That's a good point.
That is actually a good point. You can ambush in a guy that they didn't know you would have
long
to be able to kneel Yeah, actually, that could be pretty sweet. So I tentatively want to like this, and it is such a strong potential effect that I think I want to give this a B, even though I don't think I'll see people just going out and running three of it in a deck.
Daryl's Public Ambush knocks it up to a C for me from like a D plus.
I'm gonna give it a C. I think it's gonna be really neat. I do. I just don't think it's gonna be the end all be all. It's really hard to get in that event slot in Targaryen right now. So,
all right, Daryl,
yeah.
You're up next.
Oh yeah, I keep forgetting I'm second here. Okay, yeah. Next up is Eastwatch Envoy, whatever. It's neutral, 2 cost, 3 strength, power icon with a naval enhancement. It is a Night's Watch with stealth. When Eastwatch Envoy gains an icon, it also gains a naval enhancement with that icon.
Now, this guy is a pretty big tool for Night's Watch.
He actually is. The naval enhancements are surprisingly handy in the challenge phase.
And stealth on a 2-cost, 3-strength guy that could potentially be a tricon?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even without the agendas, I'm, tempted to look for some decks that would try that out. The 3-strength stealth for that cheap is pretty awesome. But in a Night's Watch deck with the agendas, it's hard to beat that kind of cost to efficiency.
Yeah.
Cost to strength efficiency, sorry.
Yeah, not to mention you'll see him in Black Sails decks like a Mamma Jamma.
Oh, yeah. He'll really help that run, even if... even if he doesn't have the extra icons, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, I just want to point out, I definitely know there have been some folks trying out the Black Sail stuff. Adam Martell wanting to discard their own decks and all. And Eastwatch Envoy can gain icons from the Hermitage.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'll gain the naval enhancement on them. So I'm just throwing that out there. You can take it or you can throw it right back.
What are you thinking rating wise?
Oh, man, I'm torn, as usual. I think I'm going to go ahead and give him a B. 2 for 3 with stealth is pretty rad.
Yeah, I wish he had a different icon built in, but he's still remarkably efficient. So I'm feeling like a C+.
Yeah, I'm leaning in the same C+ range, because he is good for Black Sails, absolutely. The stealth with the naval enhancement is pretty big.
Alright.
William?
I get a big one here, I think. This is another neutral character, Ygritte. She's 3 cost, 2 strength, a military and power icon, and is a wildling. And as a response, after you play Ygritte from your hand, choose and take control of a neutral or Night's Watch character until Ygritte leaves play. Well, yet another nail in Brotherhood's coffin, because you'll just be handing the game to your opponent when they play Ygritte. It's pretty strong. Opening it up to being able to take any neutral and not have to always worry about some kind of treat manipulation to turn an opponent's character into a Night's Watch, I think makes her much more interesting.
Yeah, but the treat manipulation does work. Songs of Veil the Bard be pretty sweet with her.
Yep, I think she'll see a lot of play. I mean, and this is another one that has the potential to really muck with any sort of uber character decks.
Yep, absolutely.
Like 3 cards in this pack that are just huge blows to them. Just really makes me wonder, like, did an uber character deck do so amazing so recently that...
A couple years back.
The FFG just wanted to hammer them? Yeah, like, is it just leftover hard feelings from your deck? Is that why these are all in the pack with your card?
I don't know.
I really wish she said printed Night's Watch character.
Nah,
that would help. That would really help, I think, balance her a little bit. But whatevs.
No, she's definitely really good. And I'm loath to give her an A because she does have some pretty serious targeting restrictions unless you are playing some specific cards in your deck that let you mess with traits. Right. So I'm probably going to leave her a B+.
I'm feeling
character Seal is powerful, but she is limited.
Yeah, I feel just a solid B. Her steel is much more restrictive than some of that other stuff,
mm-hmm.
Like you said. So if you're not able to meet those conditions, you know, your opponent, for whatever reason, isn't playing any neutral characters, which I haven't seen all that many of lately.
Varys is really the only one that I see a lot of.
Well, yeah. I think with the introduction of the Kingsguard...
That's true.
Jaime
Lannister all day long.
Exactly.
That's a good point.
Yeah. As well as where this pack is going with the new Night's Watch characters that seem really good. Cold Hands as well. There will be a lot of targets. This card gets an A from me. I think that the metagame as a whole is just totally lubed up for this card, and you know, absolutely. And even if they don't play any neutral characters, and I don't have trait manipulation, I'm probably running her in a wildling deck anyways. Outside of a wildling deck, not nearly as effective, but still probably worth a copy.
All right. Well, moving on, last couple cards of the pack, and they are plots. First up, we have a new river plot. It is Befouled River. It is 2 gold, 0 initiative, 2 claim. It has the river trait, and when revealed, the player with the most cards at his or her command must choose and discard 2 cards that are under his or her command. So it doesn't quite have printed Knights of the Hollow Hill only, but it might as well.
Yeah.
Pretty close. Though after you've used that, you know, and marshaled and whatever, you know, let me back up. And you've got 2 claim available to you that you're hopefully going to use in challenges. You're going to have to watch that next river plot when you start copying that effect and make sure you aren't up on command.
I mean, you probably just don't play any of the river plots.
Yeah, that's certainly possible. It's interesting to note that the way this is worded and the way command works, like they could discard something from shadows, something from play, or from hand. But most of the time, I think they'll just always discard 2 cards from hand.
Yeah, almost definitely.
Yeah. It's real good, though. Real good.
Mm-hmm. These are definitely getting into the realm of making river plots playable. If you do watch that command stuff, that is a very powerful effect to go ahead and copy.
Yep.
We're seeing some improvements there.
That we are. Befouled River. It's lots of times, and that's a whole deck, probably want to play it on turn one when they're guaranteed to have fewer cards at command. And at that point, it's kind of just like it's on par with like a Rule by Decree. A little bit worse, a little bit better than it in some ways, so I really can't give it much better than like a C+.
I really wish this card triggered the other river plots, but it doesn't.
It does not.
It's kind of bad.
I wonder if that is an oversight or if they did that on purpose.
You know, I'm not sure.
And anywho, maybe they probably did it on purpose. I mean, that'd be pretty harsh. That'd be pretty harsh. So it's probably on purpose.
And it's not the first one. Like Crossing the Ruby Ford, I don't think copied a river plot. So
okay,
I could be wrong there, but I don't think it did.
I'll probably give it a B. I think that's a pretty fat play for Knights of the Hollow Hill.
Mm-hmm. Boy, rating wise, I think it's potentially tough. Yeah.
Plots are always tough. Like
it's potentially a really strong effect, but it really feels geared just specifically to Knights of the Hollow Hill.
Mm-hmm.
I have a problem giving it higher than like a C+, I think. Tough call, though. Very tough call.
Durrell?
Last card.
Finish us off.
Next up is Betrayal at the Wall. So they've already spoiled this one, but we'll go over it again. It is 1 gold, 11 initiative, and 1 claim. It reads, increase the size of your plot deck by 1, limit 1 per plot deck. When revealed, choose and reveal a new plot card if you control 2 or more Night's Watch or Wildling characters. Cannot be canceled.
This is strong.
Mm-hmm.
The seat is strong.
I mean, it's going to lead to me sitting down at a whole lot of games and just always asking my opponent, how many plots do you have?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, I mean, would it even matter? I have 11. Ah, damn.
Well, I don't think anybody will have 11, but if
oh, not 11. I meant 8.
Yeah. Well, at least then I know, and knowing even that much is something. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're pretty well guaranteed initiative for one turn. And you're probably only playing this in Wildlings or Night's Watch decks, so it's basically at turns any other plot into a X11X.
Mm-hmm.
Which is to say, gives a card like a lot of the two claim plots that have like Men of Pride, stuff like that. It's gonna make those way better.
Oh yeah, totally. The no initiative has been a real downside there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're doing, say, Wildlings are already almost certainly a pretty aggro deck, so you kind of want that to claim. Granted, you may not like losing keywords from Men of Pride, but oh well, we can't have everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun card. I'm glad to also see them experimenting with the size of the plot deck and stuff. So
I agree. Cool.
Good for the game.
New space there for sure.
Yeah. I don't know, Betrayal at the Wall, it only slots into some specific deck types, which aren't necessarily bad. So I'm leaning toward like a C+ again.
Yeah, I hate to just agree again. But I think that's pretty pragmatic at this point.
Yes. I'll probably just give it a C as well. It'll be cool, but yeah, only a few decks. Unless you don't want to reveal another plot card. Then you can just win initiative.
Yeah.
Never know when that's important. I'm calling it now. Somebody is going to run it in a melee deck on the turn where you, damn it, I've got to go first.
They're already taken by surprise.
Oh, well, they're also running that. They're one to win initiative every turn. Or maybe like a Targ deck that wants to, you know, do some sweet-ass...
Ambush from the Plains?
Thank you. I want to say Taken by the Sea or some shit. Anyway,
it's not that.
That is not even that's not even a thing.
It is not. But yes, that was our review of The Horn That Wakes, the fourth pack of the King's Road Cycle. Let us know what you think on the forum, on the main Card Game DB posts, on our Facebook page, through email, through Twitter. However you want to get in touch with us, let us know if you agree, disagree, think we're ready, it's think we're brilliant.
Let's hope it's a lot of the brilliant option.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Props and slops.
Yeah, it's almost. I'm gonna drop out for props and slops, guys. Sorry, I'm almost dead.
All right, no problem. Thanks for being on, dude.
Welcome. Take it easy, guys.
Yep. Well, I guess it's just me and Daryl for this part. Since Brett had to run, we keep having co-hosts have to leave before the episode is done. Kind of awkward.
It is really weird. Probably the only podcast that does this.
I don't know. I bet there's others.
Maybe.
It happens. You know, people have lives and all.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah. Props. I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to throw this out here. We were talking about it before. I missed propping it on last week's Worlds recap episode. I'm going to throw props out there to Drafting Thrones. I can't believe I skipped over talking about that last week. It was so much fun. It was a total blast. I can't recommend it enough.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was beyond awesome, actually. It was awesomer.
Yeah. Just, like, opening up those packs and, like, seeing stuff in, like, a totally new light. Even stuff that I already love, like Eris Okart, the Dual House Eris Okart, and Newly Made Lord, you know, like stuff that I use all the time in decks. But then I open up a draft pack, and like those are the first two cards I've got in the first pack I'm looking at, and I'm trying to decide which one do I take, and like, it is a great and terrible feeling.
Yeah. It was really cool for me, because anytime we draft the CCG, I just don't know what all is in the card pool and what to look for. So it really goes to show you what knowing the card pool does for you in draft. So I had a really good time. I have actually a slot that relates to draft, where I was playing Brett. We were both, 2-0. And so we're both going to try and win the pod. Anyways, I get like 6 gold. I had a sweet ass draft. I had Threat from the North and like some dragons and some mace at the gates. It was awesome. Anyways, so I flop Threat from the North. He's got some dudes out, whatever, and I've got Drogon, the one where you pay 2 gold to -1 strength to somebody.
Oh yeah.
Oh my god. And so I'm just about to go buck wild here. And I start discarding some gold, and Brett goes, I thought it was limit once per phase. And sure enough, it was. So I didn't quite get the utility out of him that I thought I was getting. But still really, really fun. But a slop to myself for being a dummy. That whole draft was awesome, though. Darksbane even played in it. Come on.
So. Yeah. Yeah, actually, I got to play against Darksbane. Well, yeah, because all of us were in the same pod.
Yep.
For the main draft event. So I know... kits are supposed to be coming out soon, so once they are available, I say talk your friendly local game store into ordering some. You will not regret it.
Yes, and if you haven't already, well, if you're interested, you should definitely try and let Fantasy Flight Games know that you are interested, because I surely am, in a competitive limited format, if you will, of Thrones. So obviously our cards don't have the value that Magic would or whatever, but it's super fun, and it's a blast. So, and it costs about the same, it's like $20, and I mean you get a pack of sweet cards. So it was awesome.
Yeah, and that's actually I think all I've got. I slightly take that back. Slops to moving. Moving stuff sucks.
Oh, it's the worst.
Yeah, I was about to say, I haven't had the chance to do much else to proper slop because of that. So I will just slop that. It's delayed my TV watching. I'm behind on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Dracula. Sleepy Hollow.
I'm caught up on Dracula. That show is awesome.
Yeah, yeah. The first two episodes were pretty sweet. You know, I mean, I had started trying to watch Arrow before Worlds, and I haven't managed to finish season one of Arrow, and just it's thrown everything out of whack. So yeah. that is my only other big revelation. Moving sucks.
Moving does suck. Yeah, that's about it for me too. I don't really have a ton right now, but I just got draft on the mind. Really, I can't wait to draft.
Agreed. Totally agreed.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to another fine episode of Two Champs and a Chump. Danger Zone! Yeah, turn around, there's nothing to see here. Run away, no reason to be here. It's the ghost.